Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 50 of the Filthy Lip Out Golf Podcast with me, Kit Alexander, and John E. Morgan. The half century's up, which is fantastic. Coming up to a year of doing these now. Before we dive into what we want to talk about this week, obviously there's loads going on in the golf world. John and I just wanted to put a bit of an appeal out there, if you like. So we're looking for sponsors and advertisers to get involved and to partner up with us here on the podcast. At the moment, we're not really making any money out of this. We're putting our time and effort into it. We love doing it, but our diaries are filling up a little bit through the summer. So we're really looking if we can try and make a little bit of money out of it to keep us ticking over and to really just sort of pay for the time that we're sticking into doing all these great interviews. As I say, we love it, but as things start getting a bit busier, it'd be really helpful. So please reach out if you do want to sponsor or advertise with us here on Filthy Lip Out. We're on email, filthylipout@hotmail.com. And of course, on Twitter, @filthylipout. So get in touch. If you know anyone that would like to sponsor us or you want to do it yourselves, we're here. We'd love to have a chat with you. Right, that bit's out of the way. Now let's get into the fun stuff. John, you're still out in Sweden. You've been on the tour now for, 4 weeks? This will be your fifth and then your sixth week in a row at the International Open over in Germany. So with everything that's gone on, travel restrictions, you've had a little extended stay out in continental Europe. How has it been for you, John?
It's all right. The carnage of COVID, mate, it's very bizarre, I've got to say, but it's been brilliant. It all started at the Made in Denmark, where I went to, and then it filtered down through the Porsche, which got changed to 54. And then we come on to this one here in Gothenburg and played that amazing Valhall, you know, golf club, which was amazing. And then we've got a week now to chill out in Gothenburg, and then we head down to Munich for the BMW. So, yeah, we've been given a nice little apartment so we can wash our own clothes. So I've been busy doing that this morning. And it's all right. Hopefully get out and be able to hit some golf shots or something like that. It'd be nice. But apart from that, it's just wander around, see the sights, and that's it.
It's been a nice little run of tournaments as well. As you say, you've been to some beautiful cities, seen some cool events. What stood out for you over the past month or so on the tour?
Well, I'm an emotional man myself. So, you know, seeing the likes of Blandy, you know, quite a few weeks back now at the British Masters at Belfry, that was just something else. We had Tim Barter to tell us all about that, which was amazing. But I got to say, I mean, watching Bernd Wiesberger over in Denmark and just seeing how dominant he was around a golf course he obviously loves because he's won it back to back. A really nice guy, cool, calm and collected. A guy who's on the up and should be breaking through massively. And I think a potential Ryder Cup is on the horizon. I think Paddy would be having a good look at him because you can pretty much put him with everyone. You know, I think he's got a great all-round game and I think he would thrive on massive pressure like I really do. We've seen him win the Scottish. We've seen him, you know, do loads of things. You know, hell of a player, hell of a player. I mean, 8 times I think he's won now on the European Tour all in all. So he's a well-rounded, good guru. So, yeah, and then, well, crikey, mate. I mean, what a moment came 1 week later. Finishing on a Monday, Marcus Armitage, the bullet. What can we say about him apart from he's a breath of fresh air? I mean, everyone talks about what off the cuff kind of guy he is. Down to earth, he is that person. We know him really well, obviously, from the Europro. When I remember giving him, I think, his first interview at Roland Castle, I think it was. And I remember his dad telling me, you know, just take it easy with my son. He's new to it. And I you know, but you would never know. He was just, you know, his little gold chain, his gold necklace, and he had his little earphones on. He was beating balls and he was ripping them, absolutely striping them. And, you know, he gave me a lot and he was just such a lovely guy. And you just seen someone with such a passion for the game. You know, you meet loads of people that got lots of passion for the game. But this guy, if you had just 5 minutes with him, you see where the difference lies. You know, it's just oozes out of him and just he's natural. He's such a natural player. I mean, his hands and speed. I mean, yeah, he carries a bit of timber like myself and like a few other players. But he works with it. He'll work hard on his fitness, I'm sure, you know, because he'll want a long, sustainable career. And, you know, you get that through being fit and strong. You know, don't get don't have to be OTT and get completely ripped, you know, just need to be lean, mean fighting machine. And I think maybe he might do that, maybe he might not, who knows. But the thing is with Marcus, he's just a one-off, really. He's an enigma because, yeah, it doesn't matter who you are.
He's a bit of a character, an individual.
Oh, mate, he's a beauty, mate. He is an absolute beauty, Kit, as you well know. And it was very emotional. I couldn't help myself. I had to go and give him a hug with my mask on. And his interview with Jay Townsend, we had on the other week, you know, was amazing. You know, really brought the emotions out of Marcus. And, you know, we know, you know, what he's come from, probably being, I think he'd been bullied a bit or picked on and kind of broke free a little bit. Mum passed away, you know, God knows what that must feel like. Only he knows, you know, at a young age. And then, you know, fighting through and putting all his eggs in one basket with regarding golf and coming out trumps, you know, putting it all full steam ahead. And I had the pleasure of playing with him at the Open Qualifier a couple of years back for Birkdale. We were at St. Anne's Old Links, and it was just amazing how he struck the ball. You know, it's just unbelievable. And to go head-to-head with him was quite nice, actually. But then it did make me feel pretty old because he was, he was 20 past me all the time. So, it was, but it was really good. And then, I mean, just to sum it all up, you know, you come to last week, you know, at the Scandinavian Mix, you know, men against women, 78 each side, and doing battle, different tees, different length of golf courses, 1,000 yards separated them, strong winds, and a brilliant wind player comes out trumps in Jonathan Colwell. And Johnny's just a marvellous bloke, real down-to-earth, you know, he's a local kind of hero in and around Hollywood, where Rory's from, at Clandeboy Golf Club. And you know, I just remember being there when I was working at Clandeboy, working at Hollywood Golf Club with Stevie Crooks and all the members. And I remember Crooks, he needed something done with a club or something like that. And he said, oh, I'm just going to pop down to Nevada Bob's. I walked in there and there's Johnny Colwell giving a lesson in one of the swing rooms. You know, and this was 8-9 years ago, you know, trying to make ends meet. I mean, I think he was doing little bits of that. He was doing a bit of this, bit of this, bit of that, you know, different work just to get money in through the door ready for his playing career, like, you know, to have a little go at the pro ranks. And all of a sudden we see him on the Euro Pro. And one thing that sticks out with me with Johnny's game is that he's really aggressive. And this is why he's won this event without question, because of the strength of the wind, 20 mile an hour gusts, and then it was 30 mile an hour gusts on the Saturday. You know, it suited someone to be really aggressive, take your chances. You know, the pins were there not to be had. You had to be a little bit cautious with them, but, you know, with driver and stuff like that, you needed to take on a little bit more tighter lines, and it was worth doing it. The fairways were generous. And Johnny just came out trumps, and what a last round. I mean, I was following Jason Scrivener, and I thought, well, this guy's a machine. He's going to go on, you know, especially on 10 when he had a chance of an eagle on 10. And then as soon as he missed that, he missed then a tiddler on 11. So he made his birdie on 10, missed a tiddler on 11 for par. So he made bogey. And then it just started to unravel for him. Started on 14, to be honest, the par four, real easy par four. You know, he was only 30 foot from off the green. He ends up making a double. You know, he chip and putt for a birdie, and then he makes double from nowhere. So, you know, that was it, really. Spiral happened, and Johnny Colwell took it, and I raced up on 18 to see Adrian Ortegi with his second shot, approach shot into the green, got it in a good position, a little bit above the flag. It was a shame that he had a slick down there, blooms it 4 foot, 3 foot past, misses the return. Johnny Colwell, the champion. Well, you know, his interview with Iona, unbelievable. Afterwards, emotions came out. He couldn't believe it. You know, fist pumps off Annika Sorenstern and Henrik Stenson, the hosts. I mean, the goats. She's the goat of the ladies' game. And, I mean, he was in a dream world, you know, and he thanked his mum and dad, got really emotional, and all the people that supported him. And Johnny's a really good ambassador for people out there that think they maybe, you know, a little bit long in the tooth to give it a go. There's proof in the pudding right there. Jonathan Colwell, 37. Yeah. I mean, he's no Richard Bland, don't get me wrong, but he's, you know, 37 to only really just get on tour in the last year or two.
Well, this is it. Blandy, obviously older to get that first win, but he'd been on the European tour for the best 20 years for Johnny Colwell. he didn't really get his chance on the European Tour until these last couple of years, essentially.
Exactly.
So he's had to wait till his mid-30s to even make it onto the tour. And then actually quite quickly, once getting on the tour, he's got that win.
But Kit, how good's this, right? So say he goes to the Irish now, his old teammate in the Walker Cup, Rory McIlroy, is going to be there. You've got to pair these two babies up because, honestly, they've got a great rapport. They've got great history.
Yep.
You've seen the photos with them in their Walker Cup gear playing together. I mean, what a lovely
thing. Would be great, wouldn't they? The three that, you know, you've seen a lot of old pictures of them together. Lowry a bit younger, obviously, but, you know, are in and around that Irish team or coming through at a similar period. It would be great to have those three fantastic Irish stars. Johnny now having fulfilled that potential he showed in getting into the Walker Cup and partnering Rory in Ireland teams. He's now a winner as well. Of course, Lowry and McIlroy, major champions. What a buzz that would be for Johnny. And I think deserved. You know, what a grouping that would be for Irish golf.
Mate, I actually said to him, he was walking back from the recorder's hut back to where to get his interview with Iona, you know, as the champ. And he goes, Johnny, did you ever win on the European Tour? I went, no, mate. He went, sorry, bud. I went, mate, no. I said, man, come on.
Give me that.
I said, you're fine. I said, you're good. I said, mate, this is a hell of an achievement. And the buzz around him, mate, you should have seen his caddy. Great lad. His mate there as well. I mean, he was really relaxed as well. I mean, they were over the moon. They were ecstatic. They were so surprised that Adrian three-putted from, you know, 10 feet.
Well, yeah, you
know, everyone was.
You're in a playoff at that stage, aren't you? So it must have been a bit of a shock. You're like, oh, I was like gearing up to go out there again.
Yeah, yeah. I was like calling my producer, Russell Dawson, saying, can I follow Jonathan Caldwell? It's like, because I know him so well. I got so much to speak about him. And yeah, he was... I just assumed it was going to be a playoff. I didn't see Adrian Ortega three-putting that. As soon as he missed it, I thought he'd knock it in. But then when I came up closer to see how far it went past, I went, well, that's not given. But I still thought he would knock it in. It was quite a straight putt. I think it was just a little bit of a shove he put on it. It was definitely a kind of inside left putt to a degree. But if he started it straight, it might it missed the hole completely anyway. So it was definitely a block. But yeah, Jonathan Caldwell. I mean, what tournament though, mate? What tournament?
Well, it was really good fun. With the mixed event, it seemed to work well. We've mentioned sort of the difference in the tees, about 1,000 yards. And people might think, well, that's a lot to give the ladies. But actually, you're not just thinking about where the positioning is off the tee and how far they hit it off the tee and therefore what hazards are in play off the tee. But it's also about the second shot, because obviously the ladies aren't hitting their second shots as far club for club. So it's balancing how far they're hitting it off the tee and what hazards and sort of penalty areas and whatever that brings into play for the tee shots, with also having a similar kind of shot between the men and the women into those pin placements as well. And if you look at, I mean, for me looking on the TV, it seemed to all make sense and be, you know, you're never going to get it perfect, but it seemed to be pretty good. And if you looked at the numbers going into the weekend, sort of the numbers that made the cut, the numbers that were sort of top 20, top 10. It was a pretty reasonable split. The men had slightly more making the cut and slightly more in the top 10. But generally, it seemed to split the field relatively well. It wasn't overly favouring one or the other. Ultimately, the leaderboard on the final day got a little bit male-dominated, but Alice Hewson played really, really well through the whole week. Was up there.
Yeah. Well, mate, well, this is the thing about the golf course. So there was about four holes on the golf course all in all where the ladies had an advantage off the tee, like being able to take it over certain lines that the men couldn't get to. But you flipped that round, played off the same tee on five. Some of the par fives were favourable to the men, definitely. So it evened itself out, no doubt about it. I mean, I know, you know, I was hearing players saying, of course, it's a big advantage on 17, because 17 was a really tough hole. Water came into play on the left from the men. They couldn't take over the water, and the women could take it over the water, you know, which they were going with 110 yards compared to a guy going in with 180, 190 into a hoolie. And I thought, really and honestly, the European Tour and LET did it right. I thought they nailed it. I think the only thing that stopped a woman from winning it, and I will say this, was the wind. Saturday's wind really killed off their challenges, even though they were still tied for the lead, you know, going into the final day. When the wind was still up for final day as well, like 20 mile an hour gusts, it was playing into the men's arms. It really was, because it suited a power hitter, you know, aggressive, a power, you know, power really was your friend on a day like that. You could take it over certain lines, and you could, I mean, it, you know, 14, they were able to, you know, men were able to actually get there on the final day, which helped as well. Par threes were difficult throughout. I think the par threes were the biggest key for the whole thing with men and women. I think, you know, the men were only a little bit back, you know, fifth, they were on the same tee, but they were only a little bit back, and they were really strong par threes as well. So I think men had an advantage on that. No man likes to be outdriven, of course. So, you know, I think when it came to the holes like 3, 9 and 14 and 17, like I say, and there's probably one or two more I'm missing, but, you know, at the end of the day, it evened itself out really good. The standard of play was brilliant. Houston was brilliant. Really chirpy young lady, great vibe, great energy off her. Great interviews she was giving to Iona as well, and she thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it'd been great for the game if a woman would have won it, definitely. I said that in my link at the top of the show, and it didn't happen. I think it happened. It only happened for the reason the wind stayed up. I think if it got dormant, I think the women would have had a serious chance, and I think they would have dominated probably, yeah, the cut line, definitely, if the wind stayed dormant. I really do. It's definitely suited to them. They were very generous fairways. The thing was, if you went 15 foot off the first cut, the rough was super brutal. Like, I mean, I'm talking knee high, and you go in there, the only person that's going to get it out is a male with, like, the power. You know what I mean? You know, that was a massive advantage, huge advantage, because there were shots... you know, I was following Babnik on the Saturday, and she was right up there, and she went in the rough on the right-hand side of 10. And I thought it was an okay, she could kind of get to it back of the stance. I thought, jam it down. I'm not her, obviously. And I'm thinking you could, and then it pulls straight left into the water or goes nowhere. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. But I really realized then that the rough is just completely not a place for the ladies to be in. You know, you've got to be you've got to have Wonder Woman strength to get it out. You do. And men also, you know, they're gritting their teeth and their veins are popping out of their necks to hit shots out of it. So, you know, what does that tell you? You know, it's it was brutal. But the greens were really rock hard. They made them really slow, which was really hard for everyone to gauge because they're normally playing on turn and a half, 11. So really slow greens and firm is never easy. Because you naturally think it's going to be a fast putt.
Toughest, it's rock hard, isn't it, really, for playing? Oh, yeah. You're not getting the hold on the shots into them, and you think it's going to then release when you're putting and chipping onto them, and it holds.
Exactly, man. But you mean, I mean, it was a great tournament throughout and out. And what, I mean, look, we got the GOAT of the ladies' game, Annika and Stenson, and they were great hosts. They came and did a walk and talk a couple of holes with Iona while we were on course, and they like stayed for 2 holes. I think they could have stayed longer. I think they wanted to. But it was really good. You know, they put a lot in. They did lots of great stuff, fist pumping everyone coming off the green. So great energy from her. And I think, you know, might have 2-3 a year maybe of these, or might go on to bigger and better things. Who knows? I don't know.
You know, there's a lot of talk about what this does for the game and where it stands within it, a mixed event, you know. Are we going to see a mixed tour in the future? Is it all going to be like that? And I don't think it is. In reality, you're never going to completely mix the games. But like you say, 2 or 3 of these a year at the right time with the right hosts will be brilliant because it's a great spectacle. Everyone enjoys it. It's something a bit different. People can often get a bit jaded with just the same old 72-hole stroke play with the same people every week. And okay, it is that format. But the mixed event adds a very different element to it as well.
Yeah, it's huge for the ladies' game because it's, you know, equal prize money, you know, 78-78 split, you know, straight down the middle, men and women. And, you know, the ladies at the moment have been, unfortunately, I mean, I think their purses will go up in the future, definitely. It needs to. You know, they're paying for like 200,000-300,000 a week, you know, purses. This was $1 million for them. Yeah. That's huge. I mean, that's... LPGA stuff, you know, kind of prize winnings, you know, and you know, maybe just a bit less, but still is massive, you know. And yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable, really good.
Absolutely. We've got a mixed event in Northern Ireland in a few weeks as well, which I think you're working at. Yeah. In saying that that's a mixed event in terms of they play side by side, but it's two separate tournaments in terms of the men's and the women's. So again, that's a way that you can just tweak it again, where you get the men and the ladies playing the same course, the same time. You can get attention on both of them, but you just split the fields and the tournaments in terms of the leader.
Yeah. Which well, that's what makes this Scandinavian mix find this golf course an achievement, because level playing on a golf course where you've got to separate the tees and you've got to try and figure it all out. I mean, you know, Kevin Feeney and his gang there, of, you know, on the European tour. I mean, it must have been. I mean, it wasn't just him. I know it wasn't. It was all of them. You know, Ericsson, you name them. They were all sticking their 5 pence worth in and trying to come up with a great plan to make it all gel and marry up nicely, so they all battle kind of equally, you know. And it worked at the end of the day. It really did work. Yeah. It did work. But it's only a selective amount of golf courses I think it would work on. I don't think it's going to work on all of them, that's for sure, you know.
It's interesting you say that the course has to be right to create that equitable test.
They're going to have to.
And the ladies, yeah.
Yeah, they got to do their homework. I mean, they did their homework this time and it worked. I think, I think if the win stayed dormant, I think the women would have won it. They really do.
Great point. I mean, I want to go back to Marcus Armitage, because I don't know if I'm just getting sentimental in my older years, but I feel like I've been fighting back the tears quite a lot watching final rounds and winners and interviews on, well, not just the European Tour, but also the Euro Pro Tour, because I want to get into a recent winner on the Euro Pro Tour a little bit later as well. But just sticking with the European Tour for now, Blandy, you know, the emotions were flowing. Johnny last week as well, I felt, you know, a little bit of tearing up. But the one that actually made me cry, I'm not going to lie, I was in tears watching Marcus Armitage's interview, because, and I'm getting emotional again now thinking about it, which is crazy. Yeah. But we've known Marcus for so long, the best part of a decade probably, since he came onto the Euro Pro Tour and he was Rookie of the Year. You know, he was a big lad. He lost, came back his second season, had slimmed right down, and then, you know, took him a couple of years to get on, get up to the Challenge Tour. Then he took him a couple of years on the Challenge Tour. He got his wins there and moved up. And then he's got himself comfortable on the European Tour over 2 or 3 years. And we've seen the journey. And it is a different journey to the vast, vast majority of professional golfers and professional sportsmen. You know, he doesn't come from a golfing family. He only got into golf because his dad was owed a debt of money and the guy couldn't afford it and gave him some old golf clubs. And his dad just went, there you go, Marcus, I've been given these in payment. I don't, you know, have a hit with them or whatever. And he loved it and he picked it up and he lost his mum at 13, which we've heard about now, which is horrific. That caused him, as it would, to go through all kinds of turmoil. He ultimately dropped out of school at sort of 14 years old, and really golf was his solace. That was the only place he could be, the only thing he could do to get his mind in some way off of that tragic circumstance. And for him to go on and come from not money, there was no support, he's had to do it all the hard way. You know, first year on Euro Pro Tour for Q School. So he had no status, rocking up for Q School. He and his dad were camping in a tent for that week at Q School to get himself even that chance on the third tier. And he's fought his whole way through and proved himself at every level. And, you know, he is a bit of a joker. He's a funny guy. And that is integral to who he is as a human being. And it's why so many people love him. But let's not forget the very serious golfer and very serious human being who's had to fight tooth and nail to get to where he has. And he's done that. And he's overcome all of it. And stories like that, I think, just give everyone so much hope for not only personally what people can achieve in golf, but what golf as a sport can do for human beings and do for people. Because even if Marcus hadn't become a European Tour winner, I think it's fair to say golf and the path it gave him at a time when his life could have gone in a very, very different and darker direction. I think he said it to me, golf saved his life. And I think that's not to be underestimated. Yes, he's gone on and become a European Tour winner, which is absolutely immense. And he's at the US Open this week, which is, I mean, I've already started seeing the videos he's been putting out, which are brilliant. But golf saved his life long before it made him a European Tour winner. And every step of his journey, just everything he's been able to achieve, says everything about the man and about the sport that's enabled him to do that. And I just think moments like that are what makes professional golf. Yes, the majors are brilliant. Yes, we love seeing the top players going at it. But for me, stories like Marcus Armitage, Richard Bland, Johnny Caldwell are where the real magic of this sport lies and where the magic of this professional sport lies.
Yeah, and that all comes from grassroots and building yourself up and having the chances through different tours to get yourself through the levels and get yourself strong. And yeah, you got to have these other tours to, you know, find them, let these characters come through and blossom and show us what they got. I mean, Marcus is, I mean, there's more to his story, I know. And I, one day he'll probably write a book, or they'll probably do a little mini movie. Maybe Netflix might be coming in at him, who knows? But it's definitely a story that needs to be told. I think people will fall off their chair if he told it.
Yeah.
You know, straight. I think they wouldn't believe it. And I think golf is, the glory of golf is that, you know, if you had a hard time at school, I know I did, you know, I didn't like school, you know, they were a bunch of bullies. And I, my escape was golf, you know, and there's a different part of family there. You know, as soon as you got out of school, straight there, and you know, you meet people, you play with different people, and they just treat you as is, as a golfer and just a human being. So I think that was the thing. And you haven't got to spend a fortune to be a member anymore on a golf course. It's a lot cheaper than what people think as well. A lot cheaper. You know, get your kids involved. I mean, it might be 50 quid, 60 quid. You know, it might be not even that, you know, on some courses to be a member for a year. Sometimes it's free. You know, it's some great stuff out there. You know, get your kids involved. It's a no-brainer because honestly, you know, if they think they're in trouble in times, you know, in the neighborhood or somewhere, get them away and put them on a golf course and let them burn a, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours bashing balls and getting creative and speaking to new people and mixing as well. Because golf, you mix, you know, you stand on the first tee, you're a one ball, and then all of a sudden you know, two characters come up, or yeah, can we hook up with you? All of a sudden you make two new people and it just keeps going. Every day it can be exactly different. So golf is brilliant, and Marcus has done an amazing job. And I'm chuffed to bits for him. I'd imagine how he, I don't think he's a big drinker, so I'd imagine he probably just fed Ralph a nice bloody big T-bone steak, I reckon, when he got back his dog.
The bulldog's getting a massive bone when Mark.
Oh, he'd have had a massive, he'd have definitely got him a Chateaubriand or something like that. Going out one of them. Yeah, so I think. It was amazing, mate. I'm just over the moon. I mean, dreams do come true. And like he said, it was for him.
Yeah.
And I think he has every reason to do, because when he reflects, like he's already pretty much told the world, you know, when he reflects on his lifestyle and what he's come through, you know, it's his hard work, really, is his determination and his passion and love for the game that got him to where he is today. No one else. You know, he's the one that's made his hands bleed, beating loads of balls. And he had some great role models. Like you said, Tiger Woods is one of his biggest. Why wouldn't it be? You know, and it's a shame, actually. You know, he's at Torrey Pines, you know, Tiger's massive hunting ground, and he's not there, which is a shame because, yeah. But, you know, I think he's already met Tiger, I think, before when he qualified for the Open, I think. Yeah. And so he's had that privilege of being able to see him. So, yeah, I mean, Torrey Pines is a whole different kettle of fish, mate. What a golf course.
I wanted to ask you, John, obviously, you know, Marcus is very much a character and someone a little bit different. Maybe the face wouldn't always fit when it comes to professional golf and in the amateur ranks. And obviously, he was a bit of a late bloomer. I know you've had quite similar experiences. You know, you're a big character. You're not your archetypal golfer, and perhaps for you, working up through the levels, you might have been seen in a similar light to Marcus, perhaps, at times in your career. Do you feel, does that give you some sort of insight into what he's gone through, the fact that you may have had those similar experiences at times?
Definitely. I feel very similar to Marcus in the sense of, I think our backgrounds are, I haven't, I didn't, I'm lucky. I still have my mum and dad. You know, I'm very lucky. You know, I never got to lose. I dread to think what I'd have felt like. You know, that's the difference definitely between me and Marcus. But very similar growing up. You know, and I think just playing golf at a young age is an escape to get away from all the rubbish that the world can give you sometimes, and kids are cruel. I think it's amazing. And just to see how naturally it is, very similar to my style, yeah. In the sense of he sees it, hits it, he doesn't dwell on it. I think is this what has happened to him in his life is going to make him really strong. And I think he's a massive asset when it comes to future times when there's team events, he might be able to be selected or whatever like that. He'd be an amazing team player. You'd be a self-motivator. He's a self-motivator anyway, but he's also a big motivator naturally, because his energy will just feed off onto everyone because he's just full of it. And he's got some serious game, and he loves surprising people. He loves raising to the challenge. You know, if you say no, you'll batter it down with a, you know, Thor's hammer and say, no, I'm coming through. He just will, you know. Full credit to the boy, I really do. I love his personality, I love his persona, I love his game. Love him as he is a person. I like the people that he hangs around with. I know, you know, he's going over to America. Hopefully he doesn't get the old Tyson Fury vibe and get loads of hangers on. Hopefully he just can stick to his own guns and do his own thing, because I think it's working for him.
Yeah, no, 100%. I wanted to give a shout out as well to another victory that not everyone might have seen. It's picked up a little bit of publicity in the last few days since it's happened, but on the Euro Pro Tour last week, a Scottish lad called Conor O'Neill actually won down at Donington Grove. And Conor has been through an utterly horrific last 12 to 18 months. I'll be honest, I'm...
Go on, and you tell me, because I might be a little bit behind this, but I know what he's gone through, and you were there. So I know he's a lovely lad, and he's fought really hard, and he finally got the win, and it was emotional. Tell me all about it, mate.
Yeah, so the last year has been difficult for everyone, the last 18 months. And Conor lost his father and his uncle to suicide, which is obviously horrific. And, you know, he and his family have been to the lowest points you could possibly imagine. And he won last week, his first ever Euro Pro Tour victory.
Hey, and mate, you're getting me going, you silly bugger.
And I interviewed him straight afterwards, and, you know, I was fighting back the tears better than I'm doing now, to be honest.
Yeah.
When I spoke to him, he was in tears. He had one of his good mates and another player, Mickey Stewart, on the bag, who I think really helped hold him together through that final round. And that moment when, you know, he'd finished a little bit earlier, posted a number, and then a couple of guys just fell away and he ended up winning. He was on the range hitting balls, preparing for a playoff, and got the news that he'd won. And he just broke down in tears. And it was wonderful speaking to him straight after that. You know, he said, you know, this is for my family, just to give them, put a smile on our faces, because we haven't been smiling a lot. And I think that's the understatement of the century. And I think if any golfer deserved a win to bring him a little bit of joy and his loved ones around him, it was Conor O'Neill. And he got it last week, and it was absolutely fantastic. And again, on top of all of these stories that we've already talked about, you know, this isn't the European Tour, but make no mistake, this is just as significant a victory. This is life-changing, life-affirming. What that will mean for Conor and his family, I guarantee, will be far more what whoever wins the US Open this week, what that victory means for them in terms of its wider impact. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Conor, shout out to, you know, all the guys that are chasing it down at those lower levels, and what they've been through these last 12 or 18 months, because it's been more difficult for them. Tournaments haven't been happening. Their routes to the top of the game are being cut off. It's harder for them to follow in the footsteps of Johnny Caldwell and Marcus Armitage now than it ever has been. And I think that was just a wonderful moment to me to just be able to witness what that meant to Conor. and the people around him was incredible.
Yeah, I'd like to say a few things. Yeah, lovely lad. Seen him over the last couple of years now, Connor. And, you know, he's worked really hard. He's never got the win he really deserves it, you know, and the fashion he deserves it well. But, I mean, with what being put on his plate and what he's had to go through emotionally, physically, mentally, you know, just the whole thing, feeling deflated, probably on the sense of giving up the game or don't know where to turn his hat to, you know, obviously he must have someone to give him a hug. Whoever that person is, well done for doing it. And, you know, he obviously needed it. And maybe that is his fellow teammates, players that he plays with. Or he's just done it himself, had a good word with himself on the beach. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, who can imagine? I mean, what state he must have been in. You know, I mean, what a thing to have to put yourself, you know, or to have to deal with that you had no control over. You know, suicide is, yeah, I mean, suicide.
One other thing to say about Connor, he has been open and he's talked about his experiences and what's happened to him and his family over the last 12 to 18 months. And he's a big advocate of talking about mental health and reaching out, picking up the phone, asking people how they are. And I think if there's a big message to take away from this is, yeah, talk to people. If you're feeling a bit low, reach out and have a chat with someone, pick up the phone, go and have a beer, play a round of golf with someone. And also on the flip side, it's easy to sort of not catch up with people as much as you should do at the moment. Socializing is more difficult. You know, we're starting to open up a bit, but it has been a bit of a difficult time. Properly ask your mates and your family how they are.
Well, this is the glory of golf as well, though, Kit. There's many forms to what golf can do for you. I mean, you know, you go out, you come out of your home and he's feeling down, say, Connor. You know, he can go to the golf club, play with any Tom, Dick and Harry that's there and really kind of get himself away from it and chuck himself into his golf, you know, and have a chat. You know, he can air his views, he can get stuff off his chest. You know, it's a great place to go. And, you know, you're around, you know, Scotland got the best golf courses in the world, you know, some great views, able to reflect and, you know, on, you know, things past and now present. And, mate, I'm chuffed to bits and I think, you know, the top five now, there's Challenge Tour cars for the top five of the champ, you know, on the Euro Pro Tour now. You know, you get promoted. I know he's gone from like 1,689th in the world to 899th overnight after one win. So he's like cut it in half. He must be overjoyed with that. And he's a great player, great character. And like you say, mate, he's all about talking about, the downs of life and, you know, get them off your chest. He's a good ambassador and a good role model for the game. I know Paul Laurie seen his tweet as well, congratulating him, which, you know, the Open champion there from Carnoustie. What a great guy to have on your, you know, helping you along the way as well with words of encouragement. I'm sure everyone else is. And, well, I can't wait to see him and give him a hug myself, you know, when I get on the Euro Pro.
Yeah, Paul Laurie does incredible things for Scottish grassroots golf, men and women. So many of the young Scottish players coming through have been able to lean on Paul Laurie as well and Connor and all the guys on the Euro Pro Tour. I know he does a lot, and that's hugely important to have someone like that as an ambassador for the sport.
And it's huge, mate. It's huge. I mean, you've just been fortunate as well. Yuki Walker and the mighty Doogie Donnelly to work alongside. So how was that for you? If you can dry your eyes out and
happier things. My first ever live comms experience on the Women's Amateur Championship final last Saturday, just gone. Absolutely loved it. As you say, you know, a bit surreal sitting alongside Doogie Donnelly, 30, 40 years in the business, the voice of sport, an iconic voice, a great broadcaster, and Mickey Walker, an absolute legend of the women's game. Founder member of the LET, four-time Solheim Cup captain. You know, she's been there, seen it, done it. So to sit alongside those guys for my first live commentary experience was magnificent. And I loved every minute of it, frankly. And doing it again this Saturday for the men's amateur final. So, Louise Duncan won the women's amateur. She was superb. It was fantastic. You know, her opponent, Johanna Ludvigsdottir from Iceland. She'd already made history by getting to the final, the first Icelandic golfer to get that far. It wasn't quite her day on the final. Louise Duncan was a big winner, but yeah, she deserved it. But a lot to take away for Icelandic golf as well. And we've got the men's amateur this week going on with the final on Saturday that I'll be in the box for with Doogie Donnelly and Richard Kaufman, I believe. So
how are your nerves for that, mate? You know, being your first live comms, what was that like?
Do you know what? It's funny. I wasn't too bad. I was okay. I thought I would be a bit nervous, but yeah, it didn't. It never quite materialised, the nerves. There was a little adrenaline more than anything else, I think. And then once I, you know, got in there and started, it just, you know, you're talking about golf, aren't you? And you're, you know, either Doogie Donnelly's asking you a question or I'm asking Mickey Walker a question. It's just, how can you not enjoy that? And yeah, it felt really natural and really good. So hopefully people enjoyed it as much as I did, or even half as much as I did.
Well, I just what was the course like? I mean, it looked fantastic on the camera.
Yeah, Kilmarnock Barassi, it was in lovely, lovely condition, just as you'd want at links, really. A little bit of browning in the fairways and a little bit of fire. Greens sort of firmish, but you hit a good shot in there and it would hold. We saw, you know, your putters from 20 yards off the edge or short of a green. We saw chip shots, variety of it was a great test for the girls, and hopefully Nairn will do exactly the same for the men this week. Obviously, that's a fantastic links layout. And it will.
You got any tips for that though, Kit, for the amateur championship? You got any tips for that? Have you done a little bit of homework already or not?
Well,
I know it's a little bit of time away.
We're into the second round of stroke play today. So you've got two rounds of stroke play over 36 holes, Monday, Tuesday, and then the top 64 qualify, and it's just straight knockout from then. And I think the interesting thing we saw last week, Ludvigsdottir was one of the last to get in, like from stroke play. I think she finished like 56th in the stroke play to get in that top 64 and then went on to the final. So, you know, good golf is good golf, but stroke play and match play, as we all know, are two quite different beasts. And you can have someone that scrapes through the stroke play and finds something in the match play, and vice versa. Got people that look really good in that stroke play in the first couple of rounds, and then they go down in one of, you know, the first or second knockout round. And that happened last week. The leading stroke play qualifier went out in the first knockout round, and you had a girl who only just scraped into the match play stages getting to the final. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, you've got to be a good, obviously, links and win player as well. And that's often very different to what we see in the pro game a lot these days. So there's some really good young players. I'm not going to chuck any names out specifically. Just because, you know, there's a guy called Robin Tiger Williams, who is a great player. He's from my neck of the woods, Peterborough Milton. He's got a lot of pedigree about him. Mark Power, the Irish player, played in the Walker Cup. He'll be amongst the favourites. You know, a great Irish player. He's been over at university in the States. So there's some really good names in the field. It's a mostly GB and I field with the COVID restrictions, as it was for the ladies last week. But I was just looking down. There's a few Icelandic players in there. A couple of Swedes, I think. One or two Australians who I think might be based in the UK that are playing. So yeah, it should be good. Should be exciting.
Brilliant, man. Brilliant. And then we got the Mighty Torrey Pines, like I was saying, where Marcus Armitage is. And we got Jordan Smith is there. We got, well, Richard Bland is there. Thomas Dietrich, Southgate got in as well. So, I mean, Southie's, well, he was over the moon. He couldn't believe he got through. He was like, he was on the plane, I think. He was on the runway when he got news from the Porsche European Open that he got in. So he was like, well, I'm on my way to Sweden now. I'm not going to pull out. So he played. And then, obviously, he's jetting over there as we speak. So maybe fighting for his practice round today, that's for sure. And but it's going to be a golf course that suits Saki as well. We were going to try and get him on, but it's going to be a golf course for the likes of that man as well, who's only just qualified. It's a really straight, good iron player, good all-round game. So, yeah, harder the golf course, the better Southie plays, I feel. So, yeah, there's a little hint. I don't know what his odds might be, but
they're long. They are long. So, I mean,
right, there we go. Well, I mean,
you've played Torrey Pines in the PGA Tour. So,
it's
a lowdown. Tell us what they can expect.
Well, it was weird. So I played it in the Buick Invitational, and it was Tiger's pop at Hunting Ground. Tiger was playing. He ended up winning it by 3 or 4, as he did, you know, that golf course. So first time I ever met him, sat down, had a cup of coffee, said hello. That was it, broke the ice. But anyway, you know, I played the North Course. I think it's the North Course, and I shot like 68 or 67.
Yeah, the second course there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the South Course, which is the main one that they're playing this week, is brutal. I mean, it really does. I mean, the fairways are that little bit tighter. They're that little bit longer. The greens are a little bit smaller and different kind of angles. And, you know, there's a lot more holes, more on the, you know, they're right on the coast as well. So the conditions of play out on the golf course really does change. But it's very demanding. It's a better shaped golf course, just. I mean, the north is still gorgeous, absolutely stunning. You know, you would be in your top 10 guaranteed, but the south really makes it, you know, is the number one by far. But of course, it's very, very tight naturally.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're going to chuck the rough up, which is just carnage, you know, because it's inevitable you're going to miss fairways around that golf course. You know, you're not going to hit everything, and it's going to be a pitching wedge down the fairway, or you might get lucky with a lie, but it doesn't look like that might happen.
Well, I think we're going to see the tradition. It's what I like to call the worst US Open tradition every year, where you see players showing videos of horrific rough on like the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, balls disappearing. And then it happens every year. You know, it's going to be the worst rough ever. No one's ready. Wednesday night, they'll clip off the USGA will clip off the top of the rough. Yeah, well, you don't want to be in there, but it's not going to be anywhere near as bad as it is now when the players tee off on Thursday morning, I guarantee it.
Yeah, mate, they'll shave the greens will be running, they'll be running 13 guaranteed, depending that the wind's not blowing, obviously. But, you know, it's so tough. I remember, and it is instance I had, the reason I missed the cut, I think I missed it by one, or I might have missed it by two, I'm not quite sure now, but I remember an instance, I was on the fourth, I think it's a long par four, one of the hardest holes on the golf course. You've got the Pacific Coast on your left, you know, and it's blowing an absolute hooli. And we were playing Lift Cleaner Place, terrible, you know, conditions. It was poured with rain the night before, and I bloomed it way right. I bailed out. I was like, I was never going to try and hit a whale out in the ocean. I bailed out miles right, and I'm on another fairway, closely mown area. And I thought, ah, yeah, Lift Cleaner Place had a big dollop of mud. And then Stricker was coming past the other way, and he must have told, which was good, because I would have been DQ'd otherwise for signing for a wrong card. He told a rules official to come up to me and tell me, you know, what's happened, because I never read the local rules. Mm-hmm. All I did was just know the rules. So a closely mown area on another fairway, the local rules said I couldn't lift clean in place. So I finished the hole, made a four, made a great par on the real tough hole, hit it back over the trees to the bag of green, two butted. Later on, got a two-shot penalty during my round because I got told, you know, the ref came up to me and, I missed the cut by, that particular drop. So I was like, damn it. But, you know, definitely read the local rules. Any hints out there to anyone, read the local rules. They're always a little bit different. So don't just go with the same game plan that, you know, take the R&A rule book with you. No, you know, look at those, you know, local rules, because there's always some little things to catch you out. But, yeah, it's a great track, mate. And I think it's going to be down to a great winner. I got my kind of picks that I think. That's what I was going to ask you about, Kit. Who you fancy for that?
Well, I mean, so this is my, obviously I've not been there, not played it, don't have quite the insights of you, but, you know, I've been doing a bit of reading, and obviously we've seen it before for Farmers Insurance Opens and Buick Opens, as it was back when you were playing it. So, you know, my sort of, if you like, theories on it and how I've picked my fantasy team and done my bets this week, you're going to need to have a bit of length. And length is more important than accuracy. Yeah, blah, 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 US Open, you've got to hit fairways. Well, you do, but when they're as narrow as they are, even the straight drivers are going to miss fairways. And when the rough's a bit on the thicker side, as you said, John, you know, if you're having to wedge it out, if you're far enough down a hole that wedging it out or gets you onto the green, or you've got that extra little bit of strength and power that instead of hitting that wedge, you can hit a 9 or 8 iron that gets you on the front edge of that green. That's better than missing a fairway and being where you are, have no chance of getting it on the green. So, you know, we saw it with Bryson last year. That's exactly what he did at Winged Foot. I don't think Bryson's going to do the same this year, but I do think length is more important than accuracy. And you look
one
at
one thing I will say, you Kit, and I will cut you there. Winged Foot had a few more dog legs, and he was able to take him on and shorten the hole considerably. This course does not have it. This course does not have that.
And I'm not going fully on the you've just got to bomb and gouge it, Bryson DeChambeau, because I've not gone near him this week. I don't
help you.
But I do think you do need to hit it a decent distance, I think, because it's going to be set up long anyway. It's well over 7,600 yards. It's not a short golf course. So you need a bit of length, and you can afford to miss a few fairways because, hey, everyone's going to do it. Good iron players I'm looking for. And then scrambling, because like we say, if it's harder, if you're missing fairways, if it's long, you're going to miss more greens than average. So you need to get up and down. And the other thing to note is, you'll know this from playing it, John, it's poa greens, which are can get a little bit bobbly, certainly later in the day. You very rarely hear a professional golfer come off of a poa golf course having played it in the afternoon and not have a little moan about the greens, or at least not have anything, not be positive about them. You know, that's the fact of what that kind of grass is and what those kind of surfaces are. They get a little bit bumpy, bobbly, uneven once they've had a bit of traffic through them through the morning. So, you know, in the later round, you're going to, or later in the day, you're going to expect the odd little dodgy roll. So you want players that putt well on poa and also have a little bit of that patience to deal with the odd little squirming away when they thought they'd hold it, or vice versa. You might get one pop in when you think it's just missing on the edge. So that's my kind of my theory. So I'm going for someone with a good amount of length, but they don't have to be a Bryson DeChambeau, but a good amount of length, but also pretty decent straight, good iron player, and just sort of tidy around the greens on poa. Go on. What, you're smiling and having a little
chat. Oh, yeah, just I'm thinking, I'm guessing your pick already, mate. That's all. I got my pick, and a man who's just come back from having COVID. I'm a Ram man.
You've gone Ram. See, this is so interesting, right? Ram is in my team, but I'm not
betting. Well, why wouldn't he be? He's won round that golf course.
So my six-man European Tour Fantasy Race to Dubai team. So I do that every week, do my fantasy golf picks preview with Sophie Walker as well. So that's live if you want a bit more depth about the US Open. Rahm is straight in my team, but I'm not convinced he deserves to be favourite, for the simple fact he's been in isolation for 10 days. He was sensational at the Memorial for the first three rounds. He's won at Torrey. There's a lot to like about him here. But he's been in isolation for 10 days.
Like, yeah, but has he got a home like Tiger Woods with a back garden that he can chip on? I don't know.
He had to isolate where he was. He couldn't then travel. Yeah. So he isolated where he was staying at the Memorial, I believe.
True, yeah.
In Ohio. Couldn't travel. So I don't think he's really had any meaningful practice for 10 days. He shouldn't have done anyway. Maybe he was able to work something out. But
yeah.
So I'm not so concerned about the fact that he's not turning up at Torrey until the Tuesday, because, you know, he knows the course, he's won there, you know, he'll get a couple of days to see the course and how it's specifically set up this week. It's the fact he potentially hasn't swung a golf club for 10 days. Now, he goes in my top six for my European Tour fantasy team, definitely. Do I think he's the favourite, which he is with the bookies at the moment? Just because of that fact, I think it's hard to make a guy that's been in isolation for a COVID for 10 days favourite going into a major.
I mean, it's a fair shout, man. Like, meaning, I get why you're doing it, but I would say it's still Emma's favourite. I think I'm really interested to see some of the other players. I think we could get a nice little run. I think Xander Schauffele will always play good around there. I think don't be surprised if we see Patrick Reed up there again, you know, with his short game and with the escapades that he went on to win last time. You know, who knows? I mean, you know, he obviously likes the golf course, period. So, you know, you can't back him out. Got many other great players. I'd love to see Tony Finau get over the line. I think it's a golf course, though, that would suit someone like a Tommy Fleetwood. I think if Tommy Fleetwood's got his game about him, I think he could really do well right there. I really do.
Feels like Tommy needs to find something this year, doesn't it? He's been okay, but since the resumption, really, last year, he's just lacked that spark. We haven't seen him in contention a lot. He's been making cuts and he's been soft,
You know, with Tommy, I think, you know, you've had your hot, he had a really hot streak where he was really a formidable player out on tour that no one, what, you know, they just knew he was going to win a load. He didn't win as much as I probably thought he was actually going to do. I thought he was going to win a lot more in that space.
But he'll come back round again, mate. He'll come back round because golf is like that. You know, it's yeah. as long as you keep yourself in it, you'll have your moment of madness again and shining in the sun. Tommy Fleetwood will definitely come back. He's too good a golfer not to. It's not like he's back, he's out of it anyway. You know, it's still, I'm talking like he's lost the putt, but he hasn't. He's, he's completely fine. But I think, you know, when the putts start to drop for Tommy again and the eyes, you know, get really focused, and this is a good golf course to get focused on because the point of aim, considering like it's very different to say like the Scandi mix I've just been doing, this is your accuracy levels. You had a big wide fairway, now it's like, you know, down the eye of a needle, you know, it really gets you really on song. You know, you've got to be fluid, you've got to be single-minded, you've got to be picking your places, pinprick of a you know, spot to aim at as well. You've got to be really precise, really zooming, stay focused. And yeah, I mean, he's got a great man on the back, Finney's, and I think they'll do well as well.
You know, my number one pick, I think, if I had to pick one player, would be Colin Morikawa. California boy, California native, born there, went to college in the States, so we'll know the area, be very comfortable with playing this golf course this time of year as well, because it will play a lot differently just because of the Farmers Insurance Buick Open was always January, February, or is always January, February. In June, it will play differently anyway. And then on top of that, you've got the USGA set up. So I think he's comfortable. He's the best iron player on the planet.
There you go. So that's huge, mate. And what was Tiger Woods? Tiger Woods was like one of the best iron players. There you go. It's a great pick.
Well, at Torrey Pines over the years, didn't it? So yeah, he's number one on the PGA Tour in greens in regulation, number one in strokes gained putting, strokes gained approach, sorry. And I think the putting on the POA, I think he's, because he's used to playing those kind of coastal Californian courses, and a good number of them have POA. Pebble is a great example as well. I think he'll stand up pretty well there. So,
Blandy, the old boy, mate, he hits it dead-eyed dick. He really does. You know, he's pretty straight. Seriously straight. Good iron player, Blandy. Someone that could easily make a cut round there, guaranteed. Because he's never going to be out of play too far. I'm not writing him off. I'm not saying he's going to win it in the sense of I think he could contend. I think he could surprise a lot of people. Don't see him coming. Because he's got that resurgence, a bit like Stuart Sink. You know, he's just having that resurgence.
He's just playing brilliant golf, isn't he? So
yeah. So, I mean, you know, in Mickelson, will it suit him around there? I mean, if he drives it like he did at Kira Island, straight and long, can you write out someone like Phil Mickelson right there with his short game? You can't write him out. So if the driver plays ball and he hits it like he did at Kira, he's going to be there again, mate. And he ain't far away from home. He loves it over on the West Coast.
It would be the career Grand Slam for him as well.
Well, mate, we're talking about the Grand Slam. I mean, Jesus, if there was ever a time it was seriously hot, he's had plenty of times that, you think he was going to do the the Grand Slam and win the US Open. The man's in form. I mean, okay, he didn't play very good the week afterwards, but
he probably
had a hangover for a week. You know, you can't blame him for that. Drinking out of the Wanamaker trophy all week long. You know, he's carrying it around.
Drinking that trophy as well. It's big. That would give you a hangover.
Yeah, that'd get you sloshed. Yeah, that'd definitely get you sloshed. But like I was last night. Anyway, but mate, it's all good. I think Torrey Pines is going to give us a lot. I'm thinking we're going to see we've had some great people qualify from the European Tour. It's nice to see Eduardo out there again. Oh. Thomas Dietrich, I mean, you know, Guido Migliozzi, I mean, they're all there. And I'm looking forward to it, mate. I think they'll make a good account of themselves as well. They like these type of golf courses.
Yeah, I think some of the European Tour guys were surprised. Like you said, there's a lot of them out there. We had the top 10 on that run of three events that qualified.
Totally.
So there's some interesting names. One you mentioned there is someone that I've got a little each way bet on at 300-1. And that's Guido Migliozzi. Coming off of two runners-up finishes.
Yeah, he's hot, man.
Likes a tough golf course. Good, really good iron player. I saw 300-1 for Guido and I was straight into that.
Did you? You had a little pun, did you?
I've had a little dabble on that. Right, we haven't mentioned Rory McIlroy, as is, you just have to going into a major, whatever the state of play. Where do you think Rory is at the moment? Obviously, won at the Wells Fargo, hasn't done a lot in his couple of starts since then, didn't have a great PGA Championship. Where are our hopes for Rory at the moment?
mate. I mean, if he drives it as well as Rory does drive it, you know, he's going to have a lot of wedges into the greens, where we've seen in the past that's his Achilles heel. And I think with the new kind of technique he's been doing with Pete Cowan, I think we will see a massive improvement with his wedge play. And I think if he marries it all up, he's a massive force to be reckoned with, mate. You know, it's Rory McIlroy, for crying out loud. I mean, me personally, I think he should have an extra, he should probably have four majors under his belt, more than he has now. You know, that's my opinion. You know, but it hasn't quite happened for him. I think, you know, there's more going to happen, I think, down the line, but it's never easy, I wouldn't have thought. I tried changing my swing once. I went back straight away. I knew it wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. And I quickly flipped and went back to, you know, George, my coach. And it worked for me. And I liked the style. I got, you know, I took a little bit from my lesson, a different one that I had with Manny Zerman over in Miami, who played in the Masters and won Best Amateur at the Masters. He's a good coach. And he taught me this kind of exit left, go left, hold it off kind of technique. And I find it really works for like a nice fade, like a trap fade and a little squeezy fade, which was quite nice for iron play because I was lacking on iron play and he was a great iron player, Manny. So all of a sudden I became quite good on my irons, quite straight, and which is very unusual for me. I'm normally quite a bendy guy from right to left. And so I took that kind of a little tip, you might have called it, in a way. I went back to my old swing and played a few natural shots. And if I wanted to hold one up, I brought that into a shot and I learned how to play it. And maybe this is what, you know, Rory's going to do. He's going to take a few little bits and a bit from this and a bit from that. He's going to be able to break it down. He's going to be able to separate it nicely. And just hopefully just don't get confused and caught between two minds too often, because that's when the bad shots come out. You've got to be really clear, especially going around a golf course like Torrey Pines. You can't be second-guessing yourself. You've got to have a plan. You've got to stick to it. I'm sure Rory's got one with Harry on the bag. And it's not like they haven't been there before, both of them. Yeah, I just think he gets out there, he stays fresh, he stays clear. I think he'll do well. And just it'd be interesting to see, though, because, you know, I'm a big Rory fan, just like every one of us. And we don't like to pick the bones too much out of a great player like that. But, you know, he is one that is seriously talked about. And, yeah, we'd love to see do well because he's a great ambassador for our game. And, it's easy to point the finger at his weaknesses because, you know, we're watching it on TV. You know, it's easy, but actually doing it is another thing, mark my words.
100%. I want to chuck one more name at you, John, someone we haven't mentioned. And he's been on our podcast just a few weeks ago. He is, I would say, the most informed golfer in the world right now. And you can get him at 50-1, or you could last night. Anyway, it might have come in a little bit since then.
A left-hander. He's not left-handed, is he?
He's South African. He's 22 years old. And he's making quite a lot of noise. Garrick Higo. I mean, wow, first of all, to win in your second PGA Tour start, your first regular PGA Tour start, off the back of a couple of quick wins this year on the European Tour. So three-time European Tour winner now, one-time PGA Tour winner. Just playing phenomenal golf. He's long, reasonably straight, has a wonderful short game, great imagination, great variety in his short game, holds his fair share of putts. There's not a lot of reasons not to like Garrick Higo this week, are there really?
I would, yeah. I mean, when you've got one so young and fearless like he is right now, and he looks like he's got his bearings about him. I mean, I was enjoying that little conversation I've seen on the internet about Gary Player having a chat with him on the phone and saying you are something else, and it's great to see because he's matched Gary in the sense of being young, winning on the, you know, PGA Tour and stuff like that, going over there. And I mean, you know, Gary was over the moon that he's been able to achieve what he's done as well. You know, him and Wicker and Ian Harbour, you know, he's had the invites as well to go over, but Garrick Higo, I got to say, I just love his mentality. I mean, we had Josh Antman on our show and he said there was something special about the guy when he was over there.
Aura. He mentioned aura. And there's aura. Only one other golfer that has an aura.
Well, there you go. I mean, is this a new superstar on our hands? I mean, you know, South Africa's renowned for
you know, chucking them out here, there, and everywhere. I mean, look at it. They've had Ernie, you know, well, Gary Player for sure, you know, and they've had many other talented guys around the era of Gary Player that came from South Africa and Zimbabwe. And then you got, like, you know, Ernie, Goose, you know, you had Tony Johnson way back in the day, Del Hayes, Hutchie, Hobday. Now they're coming through to Louis Oosthuizen, Shaw. The list goes on. I mean, you've got, and now Garrett Higgo with another bunch of youngsters. Higgo, Nienaber, Jaden Schaefer. You know, I mean, it's crazy. And they all swing it beautifully. They swing it beautifully. It's effortless as well. And it's, they've all got power. They all, like, they're all stable. They've got great mentalities. Yeah, they've got great work ethics as well. I mean, it's just brilliant.
Yeah,
I mean, Garrick is a lovely lad. We had him on the show. He's a really smiley, happy-go-lucky, really appreciated that he's playing golf for a living, and he's kicking some serious ass as well along the way. And I think he's going to kick a lot of asses in the years to come.
He did say on our podcast he would like to kick some American ass in the President's Cup. And I think that ass whooping might be heading America's way. He's already started on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, Trevor Immelman, I think, will be selecting him next year, I think, without any shadow of a doubt, if he even carries on in a bit of this form. I'm not saying he's going to win, but if you can still get 50-1 on Garrick Higgo, put everything on him each way right now. That's got to be value, right? The guy's won three times in the last 2 months, including a PGA Tour event last week, and seems to have everything you need to do well at Torrey Pines. Chuck on, get involved.
Hot news.
I don't think it's the, how hot news is it to tip the guy that won on the PGA Tour last week? But when he's at 50-1, I mean, you know, cool. Wow, John, that was an emotional roller coaster. I'll be honest, that chat.
Well, it's nice to chew the fat on so many different areas, isn't it? It's lovely. There's been so much going on. Here listening to our podcast, The Filthy Lip, I hope you really enjoyed it. Because I tell you what, it's been absolutely brilliant. It's been nice to kind of amalgamate a load of tournaments all into kind of one conversation and get it all done. We've had no guest on the show, but I thought we didn't need one because we needed to talk about all this. We only wouldn't have got a word in edgeway. So, it's been brilliant. Thanks, Kit. And, we're all busy at the moment. We're fitting this in. It's been really good fun. And I can't believe this is our 50th episode. Yeah. I can't believe, like, I give you that chat about this time. Well, nearly this time last year.
And a year ago. That it all...
And said, come on, let's do something. And this is it. You know, we're 50th week in a row. Can you believe it?
Brilliant. Brilliant, John. Fantastic to catch up and chat as always. As we said at the start of the show, we are looking for sponsors and advertisers. So if you're interested in that, you want to get involved with us, you can reach out to us, filthylipout@hotmail.com, or message us on Twitter @filthylipout. That's it for our 50th episode. It's US Open week. So much going on in the world of golf. Thank you for everyone for listening, and we will see you next time.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.